Infendo Radio is on now.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Infendo Radio, the best Nintendo podcast on the English-speaking internet. This is episode 330. I'm your host, Holly Felmuth, and joining me tonight we have Lewis Pugh.
Hello.
Harrison Milfeld.
Howdy, everybody.
And Colin Crompton.
Hello.
All right, so tonight we are doing our usual structure. We have our What We've Been Playing section to begin with. We will then move on to Nintendo News, and we will finish on our feature tonight. Our most nostalgic games, I mean, this is a very personal thing, but our the games that bring us the most nostalgia, and why do those games do that? So that'll be our feature for today. But going into what we've been playing, I thought Colin and I could dive right into talking about our Infendo Game Night, which was on Tuesday, as usual. Well, Tuesday for me, Wednesday for Colin.
They're in the future.
Yeah.
That's right.
They're 7 hours ahead of me. They as in Colin and Lewis, so... so it's very early for Colin, but he's always a good sport about getting up to accommodate, like, the only time I can actually play games. But, we played Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate this week. So, Colin, yeah. How'd that go for you?
It was a really good experience. Obviously, I've recently rebought the game, so I'm a complete... I was in the lowest level armor and... really basic stuff, but I mean, Ollie and some others helped me through it, and I'm now on the fast track to G rank, which is nice. So, thank you very much, guys.
No problem. Thanks for joining us. I always love to have someone to hunt with. We attempted to have our voice chat on, but Collins was a little hiccupy.
Well, it's really funny. I could get bursts off, like, through of what they were talking about. But it was, like, really bad, like, 90s walkie-talkie quality. So I was like, we're in Area 2, and I'm like, what is going on? That's so I was able to make contact with them once.
Yeah. And maybe twice.
Maybe twice. Actually, yeah, it was twice. And so everything else I was just doing through, the in-game, text message. And,
yeah. I'm not very good at. I can't multitask like that. Although, Andrew, a friend of mine, was able to get through to you a couple of times.
That's right,
via the text chat. So it was all right. It would have been nice if Colin would have been able to join our conversation. It was a lot of fun talking voice chat, as always, in Monster Hunter.
Yeah. I had to, guess what your tactics would be, so I'm like, I'll just watch them, observe them.
Oh, you did a fantastic job.
So, yeah.
We didn't do a lot of monster capturing. Like, most of our hunts ended in kills because they were so easy for us G-rankers to take out. but there was, maybe one hunt where we actually, discussed via the voice chat, let's trap it. Why not? And Colin didn't get the message, but he still understood what was going on.
Yeah, I managed to work out. Okay, that sounds wraps. Okay, we could do this. I had some strength bombs, and it worked.
Colin is a very sharp hunter, so that's good news. I also actually played some more Monster Hunter on... This is just a little news thing for me, a big milestone for me. I played some more Monster Hunter on... Oh, it would have been last night, Friday night. And I had some friends help me get past HR7, which is a big deal. I didn't realize how big a deal it was until a few days ago. But once you get past hunting rank 7 in Monster Hunter, your accumulated hunting rank points will add up and send you from hunting rank 7 to maybe hunting rank 8, and then you'll go from 8 to whatever you are after that. So I jumped from 8 to 35. So that was a big milestone for me. I fought that monster whose name I can't even remember, the Dire Morales or something like that.
Yeah, Dire Morales, yeah.
Fought that guy. Oh, yeah. It was a completely new monster for me, and it was very enjoyable. So I appreciate those who were with me when that happened. I only had two friends with me, but they were both very excellent hunters and got me through it alive. So that was fun. Big milestone for me in Monster Hunter. But I think next we will actually move on to Lewis Harrison and Colin talking about the Bayonetta 2 demo.
Oh, that's a thing now? I forgot.
You did get around to playing it, right?
I did. I played only one round of it right now. I've just been kind of, well, two things. One, overwhelmed with the positive reviews that we're seeing of Bayonetta 2 right now, because GameStop, or no, GameSpot, sorry, I get the two mixed up. It's a habit of mine. But GameSpot gave it like a rarely coveted 10 out of 10, which I believe only seven other titles in its site's history have gotten it, one of which being Ocarina of Time.
Ooh. Well, I heard the demo was pretty short. You didn't get
It
through the whole
is.
thing, or?
No.
Yeah.
It's fairly short, and they don't really spoil much as far as story. I mean, we've already seen some cutscenes or something in this in various video, but we don't see. I think it just starts in the middle of a fight or after a cinematic, so
Yeah, which
not
I think
spoiled.
is actually how the game starts. It seems like it is cut like somewhere in the middle, but I'm pretty sure it's intentional. They start it in a way, I guess, quite similar to the first game, that she's just kind of in the middle of this crazy thing, and you just need to kind of catch up, and figure out what's going on and find out what happens from then on out. But yeah, I think it's essentially like the first, I guess, 10 minutes, quarter of an hour of the game, which is absolutely fantastic and mind-boggling, and everything is happening at the same time. It's
It is.
just being out there. I mean, I know this game's getting a lot of great praise, and I'm not sure how much of a sentiment this is, but it's definitely the best demo I've ever played.
You could
absolutely.
definitely make the case that the demo for Bayonetta 2, even as short as it is, packs a lot of action that not a lot of games this year have.
No, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on in just that demo. I mean, we could like just list off like the different action pieces that happened. I mean, obviously many happening at the same time, and it would be quite impressive, I'd imagine.
Yeah, and one thing I when I saw with like Bayonetta 2 Direct a month ago was, what is it, a witch mode or something like that? What's the mode that you do if you miss an attack barely and
Which time?
witch time? There it is. When I saw that in the Nintendo Direct, all I kept thinking in my head was like, I'm really going to get frustrated with this game, aren't I? Whatever. I just feel like I'm just going to mess up constantly trying to do this. Because it was the same problem I had early on with, you know, another Platinum Games title with 1/101. But thankfully, once you kind of got over that hump of that game, you began to appreciate it more and more. And even this demo, when I played with it, I was just like easily doing witch time. But again, I guess the difficulty was for that demo was set pretty low, so I was pleased the way I was doing combos, and I mean, then again, I haven't seen all the other items and things that you could do, be like, you know, the executions where you just put in a little meat grinder, like these enemies and meat grinders. I was, unless that is in the demo. Okay, then I'm obviously not doing things right. I need to go back and play that.
Yeah, your magic gauge has to be completely filled up, and then you get an on-screen prompt telling you to.
Ah, gotcha.
I think it's the X and A button together.
Okay, there we go. That makes
But
more sense.
yeah, that's right.
I'll double check that, but yeah.
No, I was very impressed with the demo. I mean, it was set in the same area which we meet myself and Colin played at the post E3 event. I didn't complete the demo there, so I'm not sure if it was exactly the same or if it ended before.
I mean, it pretty much is the same demo. But on the, when we played at the E3 event, we got two stages to choose from.
That's true.
Well, obviously, the demo, you just get the one stage, which is the better demo, I think.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I was really happy with the way the demo was set out. And it starts, like, it hits the ground running straight away. You get a very, very quick opening tutorial about this is the combos and
That was
taking your
help.
chance.
That was really helpful.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's really good for beginner players, but then it just throws you in and says, "Off you go." Thank you.
Well, that's fantastic to hear, especially, I mean, I have recently been discussing the Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate demo, which has been out for a very long time now. The game is out now. That demo is horrible, and I think it's actually having the opposite effect of what Capcom would like it to have. The first time I played that demo, I was like, exactly, this game is horrible.
Yeah, that's true.
So don't trust the demo for that, anybody. I'm just glad to hear that the Bayonetta 2 demo is completely the opposite. It's very, like, there is a tutorial, but it is short, and so it just puts you in there, and it sounds great.
Yeah, short and sweet.
Yeah, the thing is, when this comes out, you know, of course, the remastered version of Bayonetta is included onto this disc as well. I for the longest time, I said, I'm going to buy this for my 360 and just get caught up, so I want to buy the game. But I just said, you know what, I'm just going to buy the full retail Wii U release, and I'm just going to start with Bayonetta, and then finish that as quickly as possible and get the Bayonetta 2. So.
Yeah, that's probably the way to go. I mean, it's the 2-in-1 package is really cool, because Bayonetta 1 is such a good game, and of course they've optimized it, they refined it for the Wii U, and
it's gonna be
I'm looking forward to playing that
best version,
and
of it. It's gonna be on Wii U, which is pretty cool. Having both side by side in your game catalog, and I think Holly brought up a really good point about how this demo has been received well, whereas things like the Monster Hunter one wasn't. Obviously, let's not forget the wonderful 101 demo. Obviously, by Platinum themselves. Didn't go down so well, my memory serves me right.
I had friends who said the same thing. I never did play the demo, I just jumped straight into the game when I got it for last Christmas, and I had several friends who played the demo of Wonderful 101, and they were not overly impressed.
Yeah, no, I did play the demo, and it didn't feel quite right. But I still had faith in the game, so I purchased it, and I was very glad I did. But by playing the demo of Bayonetta 2, I think it's pretty safe to say that if you've played Wonderful 101 and enjoyed it, you'll probably like Bayonetta 2, despite how different the theme is of the game. The actual feel of the combat just feels a lot more... It's quite similar, but it's a lot more polished, in my opinion. And the fact it's a bit more streamlined, and so it can get you to focus on the more of the cool action elements of Wonderful 101, and less so much of having to worry about what you actually need to do in terms of, oh, I need to switch to this thing and do this, or, you know, just what am I meant to do here? You can just kind of hone your skills and practice to, you know, just be a really skillful fighter and just kind of take in all the crazy stuff which is going around you, which Wonderful 101 did quite well, but it also had a lot of these more downtime bits, or more puzzly bits, where I think Bayonetta is going to just focus more, so much more on those action sections, which I think were the best bits of Wonderful 101.
Yeah, and with Bayonetta 2, it's just, like, you know, Colin mentioned is, like, you know, it for the demo, I mean, it eases you in pretty well, whatever, with the way it controls, and, I never did test out the touchscreen controls on there, but I feel like I'm going to avoid that like the plague.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of a self-respecting gamer wouldn't?
I'm still confused why they're even there. I mean, what sort of audience are they trying to capture who would want to play Bayonetta 2 exclusively by tapping people on the gamepad?
Options,
yeah.
I guess?
Again, yeah, I do like my options, I always say. But it feels like it's almost a polar opposite of like the audience the game's going for. It's like super casual, friendly control style with this really hardcore game. But I'll give it a go. You never know. It could win me over.
Do you get a feeling that like they had to tick a box that said, oh, gamepad usage? And it's like, there you go. Touchscreen. Done.
Yeah, he uses the touchscreen.
Just crowbar it in there. I don't see the purpose of it. Because your dodge button is the ZR button, I think.
Yeah.
And so... Yeah, you know, you have to lose dodge or lose your ability to move to be able to touch the screen.
I think it almost does it for you in like a Wii Sports manner. I think it's you basically just tap your enemies in your screen, and it's kind of like Spirit Tracks was on DS. I think it's really just touchscreen.
So if that's the case, then yeah, I mean, the whole point of playing Bayonetta 2 is it's meant to like you're a badass. This is how you do it. You know. It's showing off what you can do, but then I can't see a casual person picking a game and think, oh, this is brilliant, I can play it as well. That's never going to happen.
I guess there may be an audience there which likes the action of, like, say, an action movie type thing, likes the idea of it, just isn't very good at it. And so maybe they can, like, complete the full experience where they would get stuck, like, 20% through the game normally. They can actually get through it and see all the great action scenes the game has to offer. By just playing this basically easier mode, is my guess.
Well, they could just get someone else to play the game for them.
True, but
they could sit there with popcorn. They
may not have the option available, unfortunately. But yeah, if they did, that sounds like a good idea, actually.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Well, yeah, I am kind of in between what you guys think, because I think that it is super, super unlikely that anyone will want to use the touch controls like Colin says, but at the same time I get where they're coming from, like Lewis says, so I'm kind of in between, or at least I fancy myself in between you guys' two different opinions here. On the subject of demos, though, Lewis apparently, and I guess Colin, unless you gave your one and only code for a Pokemon demo to Lewis.
That's right.
Oh, how nice of you.
Well, see, okay, so the story behind how I got this demo, because a friend of a friend of a friend had it, and because it's my birthday yesterday, and he's like, oh, did you want this code? And I was like, he sent me an email, I was like, well, I've got it, but it's not really fair for me to be, I'm like, I'm not a huge Pokemon fan, I played the early games and that's it. And so I was like, I could talk about it on the podcast, but then it'd be very ignorant view, really. So
it would be an honest to you still.
Yeah.
Well, that's true, but I thought I'll send it off to a more experienced Pokemon man, and Lewis came to mind, and there you go.
Yeah, it was a very generous offer, and I was very happy to accept this burden of a new Pokemon demo.
Happy birthday yesterday, by the way. So Colin's birthday was the 17th. I was going to remember. I promised myself I was going to remember, and then I forgot. So sorry about that, but happy birthday
yesterday.
That's
no problem.
I forgot as well. I'm a bad man.
I would say I didn't actually know, but happy birthday nonetheless.
Well, you need to join in with our the game nights that you've been missing. Colin and I
was going to join the last, but, I mean, it's one thing for staying up till, was it 2:30 over here to play some games, but when it's Monster Hunter, again, it's a game I really like, but it's not a short game. So, yeah. That's quite the commitment and a work week.
Yeah.
So I unfortunately had to decline on that occasion.
It's all right.
Yeah, I think Monster Hunting is more of a weekend task for me, or at least an early evening thing. Because when you start that game, it's hard to stop.
Well,
yeah.
It is. That is true, I have found. But you guys are kind of missing out on some of the conversations that Colin and I have had.
I can only imagine what they may be.
Yeah, it's been fun. Game nights were a fantastic idea for when we can actually all get together. But, Lewis, you want to dive into your Pokemon?
Definitely.
So was it okay, there are two versions of Pokemon, Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire, so is it a demo for just one, or kind of both?
It is a demo for one.
How does that work?
And which means they put both logos on the title screen, which looks rather awkward.
Wow.
Yeah. Or Lewis has just gotten injured. He's like, congratulations, you get the combined offer of these games.
That'd be great.
Yeah, and I mean, it almost seems weird how in the digital age there are still different versions of the Pokemon games. I mean, especially with the online trading and such, I don't think the need for having two versions is or makes as much sense as it did back in the day, where you would physically buy each cartridge each and you link up with a physical link cable to trade the Pokemon, and it kind of felt a bit more, I don't know, substantial.
Yeah, I think it looks good on their sales chart.
I guess.
They got two versions, as well as having occupying two.
I guess it
slots
backfires
on, like,
as well, because they are listed as different games. If it was one, it would be crazy super sales, and they'd be like, oh, Pokemon sold a bajillion, we have made a new name for it. But now, the demo itself, I mean, I think this is the first mainstream Pokemon game to actually have a demo.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's been a lot of talk on it. I haven't been all that excited to get a demo code or whatever, so I don't really know what's going on, but I know there's a lot of talk.
I mean, to be completely honest, I mean, I'm usually pretty excited about Pokemon games, and I think this may be the tipping point for me. I mean, like, before I played the demo, I wasn't too up for it. I hadn't been following the news that much about the Ruby and Sapphire remakes. I mean, partly it's the remakes. I mean, not that there's something hugely wrong with it. I mean, I like the remakes of Gold and Silver and Red and Blue. But I didn't hugely like Ruby and Sapphire back in the day. I remember that was kind of one of the first Pokemon games for me where it felt a bit like going through the motions. And some of the games beyond that have kind of grabbed my interest more. But the demo, it's a bit mixed bag, really. I mean, I like how the demo's paced. It kind of, it chucks you in like not the starting village. Like it's a, let me check, got the demo open here. So you start in Moss Deep City, and you kind of, you fly down a Pokemon, and you have not your beginning Pokemon, but you get the tubes between one of the starters, but they're stage one evolutions. And so they've already learnt a bunch of moves, they're kind of ready to fight. And so it's a bit more faster paced, it's a bit, got a bit more action in it. You start fighting not the rivals, but the evil teams. And there's not much exploration in the demo, as you probably would expect. And it kind of forces you down this path, because I don't think it lets you catch anything, because if it did, then you could really spend so much time in this demo by, you know, catching things and training them. And even if it's just closed off in this one little village, if it gives you some proper, like, a proper shop and place to, you know, catch things and battle and such, you could do a lot and waste a lot of time, which I don't think they necessarily want you doing the demo.
Would you consider maybe Pokemon Ruby and Sapphire, the originals, I mean, when it came out, to be the, up to that, like, before these remakes, you know, the weakest out of the traditional Pokemon games?
I think I probably would.
That's what I thought. That's what I kind of thought, or whatever. I mean, I remember I bought, you know, bought Red, Blue, Yellow, got both Gold and Silver for one Christmas one year, and when, right around the time when Ruby and Sapphire were about to be released, I just had no interest. Maybe it was the fact that they didn't do as much to change up the graphical layout of the game on the Game Boy Advance. I mean, yeah, there were differences, but it just didn't... Again, I think it was at that point in my time when I finally realized it was starting to look the same.
Yeah, no, I completely see where you're coming from, and yeah, no, I think I could... My thoughts are very similar back in the day.
Well, I think everyone has a vastly different experience with this series. It's really weird that it's Pokemon, but it's very different amongst different people. The first Pokemon game that I ever really got into that I owned myself, because I was a poor kid growing up, was actually Fire Red, which is technically part of Generation 3. It's the remake of Generation 1, but it came out during Gen 3. So that was my first experience. I was way into Gen 4, loved Gen 4. I was late to Gen 5, and then I was right on time to Gen 6. And so I think everyone's experiences with the Pokemon series just differ a whole lot.
Almost definitely. And I can understand if Ruby and Sapphire was kind of like your first entry into Pokemon, I imagine it kind of ranks pretty high amongst yours, because you don't, you know, that you're not really fed up with the tropes at that point. I mean, it's all new to you. The fact that, you know, there's 8 gyms and, you know, it's the whole catch-em-all and you're fighting these evil teams. I mean, it's all new to you, so why wouldn't it be a great game? But in terms of the demo, I mean, it's quite cool, and I like some of the new, like, the menu stuff, which they always switch up. I feel it's part of an area in Pokemon games where they've never quite got it, like, great. It's usually good and functional, but in terms of, like, the menus and the sub-menus and all that stuff, I think it looks pretty good so far from what I've seen in the demo, which I think will go a long way for if you're one of your people where you're going to move over all your Pokemon to the new game and so on, and then you're going to, you know, battle everyone and trade everyone on the current game. I think those things can go a long way, and I also like the kind of the widget type stuff on the touchscreen. Now, it only has the one on the demo, but I can imagine the sort of thing that it will do in the full game. And on the current one, it's kind of like this news feed, and it's got this kind of like pixelated news reporter, and it's just constantly kind of talking about different things in the Pokemon world. And it's all kind of really pixely and cute, and I like the idea that you can kind of glance at that while you're walking around and doing your adventures. And it has just kind of an icon for each of your menu options things, just in a simple horizontal row at the bottom of the screen. And that seems like that's going to be very nice to use. I think X and Y got a bit busy with its touchscreen stuff. And so this looks pretty cool. And at the end of the demo, which is not that long, I think it's probably not that far off the length of Bayonetta, actually thinking about it. It's about 15, 20 minutes or so. And at the end of that, you actually get a Pokemon, which you can transfer to the full game. So it kind of encourages you to buy it. And you get a Pokemon which is a Glalie, if I'm pronouncing it right.
Glalie?
Glalie, that would be it, the ice type. And
I know what you're talking about, at least.
Yeah, it's kind of like this silver black sphere with blue eyes and kind of these pointy ears. But it's holding an item which lets it Mega Evolve. Which,
of course,
yeah.
Mega Evolution.
I'm not sure if you can actually, because you kind of get that at the end of the demo. I'm not sure if it lets you kind of see what his Mega Evolution is, or you have to wait till you can transfer it or not.
Can you not restart the demo and?
Oh, it actually lets you jump back in the demo afterwards. I've not really done anything in it since, but it lets you run around and. So I'm not sure if I can get to a fight in the Mega Evolve, and that would seem to make sense. But yeah, you can transfer that guy afterwards to the full game.
That's nice.
I assume they're going to open this up for a more of a sort of a public download just on the eShop for everyone to play. And to it would be like a nice incentive for people to buy the full game, I guess. They have that waiting on their system.
I get the feeling that, though, if there's a public demo for everyone and not just these special codes, that the public one won't have the special Glalie with a mega stone at the end. But we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
I did hear, though, that with both X and Y and both Omega Ruby and Sapphire, this is one of the few first Pokemon games where you can actually collectively collect them all.
This is true, yeah. And obviously the online trading always helps nowadays.
Yep, for sure. I was like, you know, and I still do this, taking all my Pokemon from, it was back in Gen 3, I have this massive collection that I've just been moving from generation to generation, so. But now it's necessary to me, because I have a special connection with this massive collection of Pokemon that I have personally. But to catch them all, I think mostly what you do is some online trading, so.
Yeah, so have you ever caught them all?
No.
See, I've done it once, and you could probably guess which gen that was.
Gen 1.
Yeah, Gen 1. Yeah, in Gen 1, I properly caught them all, including getting an event Mew.
Ooh.
Which is pretty cool.
That is nifty.
No, I will say that I've caught more in my lifetime right now than whatever Ash Ketchum has, which, if you think about it, I believe it's like 43 or 46 that he's caught without the span of the show.
Yeah.
Is that still up to date? Because obviously that show still airs.
Yeah. It probably is up to date. It sounds pretty accurate to me, as long as you're not counting all the Tauros
or whatever. Course, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think didn't he catch like 15 Tauros or something?
Yeah. Don't know the exact number, but yeah, he got a lot. Just to populate Professor Oak's research lab back in Pallet Town.
Oh, we know Professor Oak is just sending them to the slaughterhouse. cookouts.
Well, they've got to eat something. I mean, it doesn't actually mention, like, they don't have cows or things in the Pokemon world. They must eat Pokemon. Surely.
Yeah, I think in Gen 1...
We don't know.
I'm not sure how official this was, but there were, like, sites of proper animals before they kind of got their act together and scrapped the whole thing. I think there's, like, trading cards with, like, cats and dogs in, and I'm pretty sure on the first season of the anime...
Cats and dogs.
There are some animals or something.
Generic-looking animals.
Get some very brief appearances. But nothing in the modern stuff.
How did you manage to get the event Mew? Because this is before Wi-Fi. Did they do something to your cartridge?
Yeah.
Or?
Oh, I mean, actually, this could kind of go with a little bit of a new story. The official Nintendo magazine of UK shut down this month.
I heard about that too.
No, it's a great publication, but I noticed that many shops just kind of stopped stocking it, so
yeah,
it couldn't have been that great for them, because I hadn't picked one up for a little while because I couldn't actually find one. Which leads me to a point, back in the day they did kind of this on the roads tournament type thing. They took it around the country, and if you beat one of the editors of the magazine, you would get a Mew. And it was all transferred over link cable.
The old link cable. Those were the days.
Do you suppose they were going easy on you? Because, I mean, it's just a bunch of little kids.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely were kids back then. I probably wouldn't have been the appropriate age for Ash when I got my Mew. we're similar enough.
When we talk about our nostalgia feature,
of course, yeah.
I guess Pokemon might be one of those things for you. But I think we should dive in now to Nintendo news. Lewis just mentioned one bit of news that is very saddening for sure. Our next piece of news is pretty sad for Europe, but very good for the United States. You can now, and I'm going to change the wording. On the notes it says, buy digital games in your web browser. I'm going to say buy digital games from your web browser for Wii U and 3DS, but only in North America. So this is now an option. You can go to Nintendo's official site. And basically, from there, you can log in as a guest or with your Nintendo Network ID and buy digital games and send them to your 3DS or Wii U. So that's pretty nifty. It actually, most first-party Nintendo games work this way. Like, you can get them. I tested out a few. I checked Tomodachi Life, Fire Emblem, which is kind of an older one, so I was curious about that one. Animal Crossing you can get. And the newer ones, of course, Mario Kart 8 for the Wii U and Hyrule Warriors. So most first-party Nintendo games you can get this way. You can actually have them sent straight to your system or get a download code, so there are a lot of options, and hopefully it comes to other regions as well.
One thing I want to... I applaud this option on your for this, because, you know, we know how far this has come when it comes to digital distribution and their online infrastructure. But is there a possibility to also do this, I mean, through your phone, but also, say you buy a digital title through the site, whatever, on your mobile browser, and I'm hoping through your browser or your mobile phone, you're able to connect with your Wii U or something like that, hopefully sometime in the future, to download it while you're away, so you don't have to wait to get home to download it.
I'm not sure. I was actually kind of confused. I read, you know, a couple articles trying to figure this out. I didn't want to buy a game and test it out. But I think you can have it sent to your Wii U. And I think maybe, just maybe, if you have the right setting on your Wii U on, it'll download automatically. But I don't see that being a possibility for the 3DS. So as far as the 3DS goes, you probably just buy the game, go into the eShop, and go to your downloads or something like that and select re-download for the game that you just bought or something. So it still isn't a, you know, perfect system, but...
It's getting there, let's just say.
It is getting there, yes.
But, when I was looking at the store, and this has actually popped up in the newsfeed for a little bit, when I was just bored at work and Twitter, but if you go in the Nintendo store right now, the high-capacity Wii U batteries are finally back.
Ooh, finally back. I didn't realize that they were...
I think for a while I could not find it on the official site.
Yeah, they were missing in action for quite some time.
And I did not want to buy a third-party source to it.
I hate third-party stuff. You just can't trust it.
Especially with batteries, I would avoid them. Always stick with the batteries. If you're sticking it in anything expensive, pay a little extra, just in case.
But these are $32 in US dollars, and I'm just saying, you might want to buy this before these things disappear for a longer while.
Yeah, and I can say I've been using one of those high-capacity batteries for quite some time now, and it really makes the gamepad like a different thing. I don't have to worry about the battery draining whatsoever. It outlasts all my kind of gaming sessions, whether they're even party ones, where the gamepad's being passed around person to person. And just kind of being left uncharged for periods of time, then going back to the Wii U, and it just lasts the entire evening. And it's really nice not to have to worry about plugging it up.
Yeah, I'd have to get one of those. I mean, but the gamepad dies on me about 2 times a day.
My gamepad dies on me even when it's not turned on. Like, if I go about two. No, if I go 2 or 3 days without playing on my Wii U, I'll turn it on, it's like, okay, what gives? Nope. And, yeah, it's dead!
You got all these fancy ads turned on.
Something like that, I guess. It's just, it's absurd, but...
Well, thanks for the bonus news there. Yeah, I didn't even really know or hear about that. So, great bonus news. I will definitely look into that, because my Monster Hunter sessions tend to go pretty darn long sometimes. So I'll look into that. Some very fantastic news for Europe coming up, though. Shovel Knight is finally coming to Europe and Australia in November. Yeah. No exact date known yet, but it's coming.
There's also another game that's finally coming to Europe.
Is it? It's not Shin Megami Tensei.
It is.
Okay. Yeah,
I believe it's a link screen of a pre-order for it on the European eShop. It said like October 30th.
Yep. Oh yes.
Oh.
Sweet.
Come on.
Good for you guys. I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad that there's some good news for you guys.
I'm really excited to play Shovel Knight on the Wii.
Sweet. Mm. Did you get you probably finished like what, one, maybe two levels on Steam? Did you get any further than that since we talked last?
Really. I've only dabbled in it. It is really cool though. I don't know why I'm waiting, even though I technically own the thing, but
oh, I know why you waited.
Yeah, I got the Nintendo in my blood.
Yeah. So are you guys getting the 3DS version, the Wii U version, or both?
It'd be Wii U for me.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, Wii U for me too, I should think.
I want to see the sprites as big as possible.
Yes, it is a gorgeous game. It really leaves an impression, which is, you know, funny because it's not hyper-realistic like a lot of well-praised video games are today. The graphics are just fantastic. I don't know. I think that people have weird ideas about what makes video game graphics good nowadays. But we will move on to our last piece of news, which is some more leaked information. This was Amazon. I guess Amazon leaked some information about the exclusive game modes in Super Smash Bros. For Wii U. We have like these challenge modes. I forget the name of them, sorry. Like, there's a Crazy Hand challenge mode and a Master Hand challenge mode, where basically either the Crazy Hand or the Master Hand deals challenges to you, and so you can complete those. Don't know exactly how it works, but we also have a board game mode, which should be interesting. Very interesting. And we also have the Stage Builder returning, so yay.
Supposedly.
Yes.
Ah, I guess that one's a supposedly.
Well, no, I meant these Amazon listings, supposedly. I mean, I hope they are. I mean, because when we were talking before recording, is that there were those leaked Smash announcer clips, I believe, in the 3DS version that were not unused. Yep. And one, it did say crazy order for, like, this is what supposedly is for those crazy and master modes that are censored off on the, that Sakurai posted on his daily Miiverse updates. You know, it's a single player mode, but from the leaked audio clips, I believe, or the ones going through the system of 3DS, which are kind of odd that we're talking about the 3DS, is Crazy Order and Master Order. But also, there was one, I believe, that they unlocked on there that it may have been unused, or it could be DLC. It's a tournament.
Interesting. Well, why wouldn't the tournament mode make a return? Tournament mode's been a staple.
I mean, yeah, while we're talking Smash Rumors, we have one of the sound clips, which is hidden in the 3DS version, is also, and then the announcer saying, 8-player brawl.
That's right.
So maybe that could be a mode, again, in a similar way, which will be on the Wii U, which would be very odd to play, but could be quite cool. You know, and it might even like go into this kind of board game mode, which is odd, very strange. I don't know whether it's just going to be like some sort of Mario Party game, but you play Smash instead of a mini game for every turn.
That'd be funny though. That'd be great.
Mario Party done right.
Yeah.
is it odd knowing that this is going to have an online functionality, and yet Mario Party series does not?
Oh, well, if the board game had the online capability in it, and like the next Mario Party doesn't. I mean, wow. I'm not sure how far they could go with this board game, because there is another Mario Party coming out. But if this one was like a really good mode, and you've got like the full almost 50 character roster of Smash Bros, why would you pick up Mario Party?
Yeah, but I think Mario Party is way more casual though.
True, and I guess it has the mini games and such. So I guess it has all that appeal.
That's right.
The next leak we're probably gonna get is it's going to be a hidden cart mode in there. I'm like, okay, you're just mixing and matching all your series. You're mixing and matching all your series, Nintendo. This is not just getting out of hand.
Oh, that would be interesting. All right, so speculation.
One last thing, though.
I'm so excited for this game.
Oh, we are. But did anybody see Sakurai's last posted photo on Friday that included the last story?
Oh, yeah, Zale.
Oh, yes.
Oh, right, yeah, the new photo mode for the trophies.
Yep. where you can set your trophies up just about any way you want to make them look any way that you want, and you have Zale like grabbing super spicy curry out of Master Hand's hand.
Yeah, everybody thought. Everybody got a little speculative on that thing. Like, he's a playable character. Like, oh, it's just a photo.
Yeah,
I figured he was either it was a really weird setup during an actual fight, and he was an assist trophy, or he's just a regular trophy. So
yeah,
but that's cool. I really liked the last story. It's a great game.
There's got to be DLC. There will be.
Yeah.
Because you remember in the beginning of the development when Sakurai was mentioning about the amount of adding new characters to the roster, and he said that was not an important thing. And at that point, the quote at the beginning of the development, I thought, like, oh, we're just going to have a smaller roster with more less clone characters. That was not the case with Smash Bros. 3DS.
Nah, it's a pretty impressive roster. Odd how they kind of apparently stopped that. You know, it is 49, I think there is, unless you start counting the different Miis and such. And then again, there's a lot of characters which have alt characters in themselves, like Captain Oliver and Alf. And obviously, with Bowser Jr., he's got all the Koopa Kids. And so if you think, like, how many character slots the Koopa Kids took in Mario Kart 8?
Yeah.
I think Smash actually has a lot of characters.
It does, and I don't think it's that overloaded with a lot of clone characters. I mean, like, only counting like four or five on my hand. Yeah. It's not really that much. It's just
as fine games go, that's pretty good.
And the only thing, the only one I'm just perplexed by is, why is Dr. Mario in there?
I was going to say Dark Pit. I think he's the stranger admission out of the two.
Yeah.
Because at least Dr. Mario is kind of like how Mario was from Melee. He has the tornado move instead of the flood. And apparently his moves are just a bit more like they were in Melee, opposed to how he is in Brawl and now in 3DS, which is Mario.
They could just made an alternate outfit for Mario, though.
True,
and changed his moveset at the same time.
Yeah, why not? Why not extra characters? It hasn't took anyone's place.
No.
Obviously, I'm avoiding Ridley territory here. I'm saying you could have put.
They've not told us about that yet.
We've seen
Ridley in Smash. Well, kind of.
A shadow. That's
we've
it.
Seen a shadow. When will they show us more of the shadow?
I know. It's just, why doesn't Sakurai mention by name again? But I feel like if you took Dr. Mario or Dark Pit out, or Dr. Mario Dark Pit out. Wow, that's a say that five times fast. If you would put, and I'm forgetting the character's name from Sin and Punishment, or even go more obscure and bring characters from Golden Sun.
Oh, that'd be great.
Well, we did get a couple of obscure characters, as it's called in Europe, the Duck Hunt Duo.
And you know what? That makes up for everything. Because I wet myself with glee when I just saw the final Smash move for Duck Hunt Dog. I was like, oh, what's this going to be? And I did it, and I was like, oh. I didn't get that same feeling until I saw Mega Man's final Smash when I got to see that for the first time. During Smash Fest, when I waited in line for four hours, I just kept hearing everybody just going wild. I'm like, what's going on? Oh, it's Mega Man's Final Smash. You just wait to see it. Chose Mega Man, did that Final Smash, and I just wish somebody would have photographed me because it just the look of joy on my face was just like up tenfold.
Wait, if you search YouTube, the Smash Invitational, and find the clip where Mega Man does his final smash, and then you hear the crowd reaction. It was probably like that was happening in your mind.
Oh no, I watched that clip because I think that was the one thing in the tournament I missed, and just the announcer's commentary on that was just great. We're just saying like it's like it's Mega Man, it's Super Fighting Robot, and then the last line he says, "Fighting to save the world." I'm like, I'm using that line.
Oh, that's good stuff. I'm just glad that when talking about clone characters, you didn't mention Lucina, because she's the bomb. So moving on, we are going to dive into our feature. Nobody say anything against Lucina; she's awesome. Although I will say that as far as clone characters go, there's nothing significant to make her different from Marth. Still love her. But our feature tonight, most nostalgic games to us, and why Why are they nostalgic to us? Why do video games become so nostalgic like this? So I'm just going to quickly start off by listing the games that I put here. It's just a random hodgepodge of games that, like, when I play them, I think I own or at least have access to all of these at this point. So when I go back to play them, it just, there's just this warm, fuzzy feeling in my heart from when I played them in my childhood. There is Frogger's Adventures, Temple of the Frog, which was a GBA game that I had when I was a little kid. Super Mario World, which is number one for me as far as nostalgia goes. It's just the best game, one of the best games ever, period. Twilight Princess, as in Zelda Twilight Princess, for some reason. That just, I don't know, something about it. Kingdom Hearts, as in the first Kingdom Hearts for PlayStation 2, so it's not exactly Nintendo, but still a lot of Kingdom Hearts games have come out for Nintendo systems. Crazy Taxi, which again I originally played on PS2, but now I have it on GameCube. And finally, Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. All of those, for different reasons between each game, are super ultra nostalgic for me. It's probably like the ultimate list of nostalgia-inducing games for me. So there's something about video games and playing certain games when you grow up that, like, they just touch you in a way when you're in those tender years that, I don't know, you just never forget those feelings. And so that's kind of how those games are, how and why those games are unforgettable for me for some weird reason on some of those. I mean, Frogger, yeah.
Yeah, I was curious about Frogger. I think Frogger. It's, assuming you didn't play Mario World on the GBA, it's the only GBA game you've listed. Was it like one of the, like, kind of the first game or one of the first batch of games that you played on your GBA? Is that why it's on the list?
Well, the first game I ever had on my GBA was actually Namco Museum. So that's a little bit, you know, of a special game for me. But the reason Frogger's on there is because I loved it when I was little. I had a copy of it when I was little on my GBA SP. And then I got rid of it. I don't remember exactly what I did with it, but for years I didn't play it. And so it's just nostalgic in a sense that, like, I loved it growing up. And then there was this massive gap where I didn't play it. And then recently I bought a copy. I thought I'd just try looking it up and seeing if I couldn't get a copy. Got a copy, played it, and it was just like, aw, fuzzy feelings inside from when I was little. Yeah, it is actually a pretty dang good game. So if you like Frogger and you have a GBA, consider Frogger's Adventures, Temple of the Frog.
My little sister had that game. I think we both got Game Boy Advances. I think that was like one of the first few games you got.
So what was one of the first few games that you got that's nostalgic for you?
Well, I gotta say, what constitutes as nostalgic? I mean, for us, I'm
a good question.
Well, yeah, it's very personal.
Well, for me, what I feel like constitutes nostalgia is, again, you look back to something that is, again, from the past that is actually being reused, but again, it's just more of a something of a memory that still holds dear to you. But even when it comes back, that's usually what thrives. I mean, that's kind of the argument a lot of people say against Nintendo, is that they thrive too much in nostalgia. But that's a whole different argument altogether. But,
it's relevant. Go on.
But, no, to answer your first question, Game Boy Advance, my first two games I had in that Game Boy Advance were F-Zero Maximum Velocity and Super Mario Bros. Advance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're both launch titles.
Yes, both of those were, and to this day, I regret not picking up Castlevania Circle of the Moon, but thankfully that's in the Virtual Console now this week. But, if I had to correct my most nostalgic game, again, you just go back to, it's more negative back when I was younger. Like, really young. My NES or my Super Nintendo or my Game Boy. And, it's, oh boy, I'm just trying to rabble through my head just about this, and, you know, but this is going between, like, nostalgic, or is it the one I hold most dear? I mean, the one I say in my head is Super Metroid or Link to a Past, but that's, I don't know. It's, I'm trying to find something that is, like, nostalgic to the key that, you know, you look back and you're like, yeah, I remember that game. Or, yeah, it doesn't matter, you go pick it up. And I would say Tetris, but that's more timeless. Tetris is more timeless. That's a game that's years would go by, it doesn't matter. Same thing with Super Mario Brothers. I feel like that's a timeless game that ages well. No matter what. Really? and something I haven't played in a while, and again, this goes back to when we were talking about Smash Brothers, Duck Hunt. It's something that...
That makes sense.
It really, I think, probably was probably, that was probably one of the first few games I first picked up, and again, it's fitting knowing that it was the NES Zapper was the thing I would pick up the first time. But, again, I have those memories against that dog that I hate so much, but then I began to love again with Smash Brothers, so...
Yeah, I think nostalgia helps when it's kind of, you think of a game with the system it's on as kind of its own thing. So with Duck Hunt, you think of like the obviously the NES and the Zapper, with Duck Hunt as it's all in its one little package sort of thing. And so yeah, when you say like games like Tetris, although yeah, I put it on my own personal list of nostalgia games because it has not really changed that much over the years, and all the various platforms it's on, it's not as nostalgic as some other games you could think of. I put a little list together of my games or games that I think, well, games I think of when I think of nostalgia. And the first games I started putting down were Game Boy games, because that was basically the first Nintendo system that I started playing. And so I've got Link's Awakening on there, Mario Land 2, and Tetris. And basically there were the games that I was playing. Not necessarily the first games I would play, but, you know, the first memorable games that stuck with me that I played in that system. Especially Link's Awakening, that really kind of stands in my memory. Obviously, surviving the test of time, but because it was my first Zelda game, and Zelda games all follow a similar kind of formula. So I think any whichever Zelda game you originally play is going to kind of have a very lasting impression on you, and Link's Awakening is that game for me. And Mario Land 2 was kind of my first proper Mario game, which is going to be odd for many, because Mario Land 2 is actually quite a weird game. Not necessarily as weird as the first Mario Land, but it's not really, doesn't really follow the Mario Bros. Series of traditions. But yeah, it had nice big sprites, and it kind of made Mario more of a character than he was in his original game for the Game Boy. And it was also the first game where I were in, which was pretty cool. And I remember the game being really tough at the time. But having gone back to it of recent years is actually quite easy. So I wasn't very good at my gaming back then.
Well, who was?
Exactly, yeah.
No little kid is really good at gaming, I feel like. I could barely get through the first few levels in the original Super Mario Bros.
Well, exactly, yeah. But I think it was a much easier game than the Mario Bros. Series. And it had.
If you want to hear, it's like rather impressive. I've got a 7-year-old niece, and she finished Super Mario 3D Land.
That is pretty cool.
By herself, and I'm like, that's really impressive.
Seven is very young.
Yeah. See, sometimes I feel that my gaming skills have improved considerably, but and other times I feel they have dropped considerably from when I was younger.
Oh yeah. Yeah, me too.
But
yeah,
they just fluctuate through.
Yeah,
the years.
Well, it also depends on the type of game. For some reason, I think platformers, you can have the perfect mindset at a younger age, and you can just kind of hold that run button down and just jump through, you know, without fear, and you know, just somehow get to the end of the stage.
Whereas... platformers to me are the best way to introduce younger gamers to games.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
They usually are fun and colorful, so.
That's true. Although Mario Land 2 wasn't. It was very shades of grey.
Oh, I was gonna ask. So, is Wario as a character? Is he really near and dear to your heart because of that, or could you just not really care less about Wario?
Well, he was obviously the baddie in the game, and. It was cool to see him, because I later played the Wario games, which I guess was where it all started in Mario Land 2. And he kind of had this, you know, the Viking-type helmet, which he's kind of lost nowadays. And he was, you know, obviously just a bit more generally eviler, and opposed to just being stupid. But yeah, Mario Land 2 also had... It doesn't have, like, the traditional Mario themes, but the levels are kind of based off, like, there's, like, a horror-based level. And there's one where you're kind of inside this mechanical Mario, and there's one when you're inside a whale, and there's lots of weird themes. It's not like in the Mushroom Kingdom, I don't know where it's meant to be. But yeah, that game sticks in my memory, it's pretty cool.
Interesting. So Colin, any games to you? They may be Sega games, but that's alright, throw some out there.
I stuck to my Nintendo guns on this one. mainly because when I was growing up, about, I was like, let's think about 9, 10, 11, we had an N64 at the time, and so my my formative years playing games were, that's what brings up the nostalgia. I replay and I think, oh, back in the day, this was amazing. So, I mean, I've wrote down 4 games, and top of the list is Majora's Mask, because I completed that first, and then Ocarina of Time.
Ooh,
so, yeah, I did it kind of backwards. But it stuck with me because of the moon. You know, when you're young and the moon's coming towards you, and it's like, oh no, you know, it's terrifying.
Yeah, that game's kind of oozes atmosphere.
Uh-huh. That's right. And so the game stuck with me a lot more than Ocarina of Time did. It just seems like the threat was more real in Majora's Mask. And plus the masks were terrifying. Watching Link put on the Zelda mask, the Sora mask, sorry, was, that's pretty scary for, you know, a 10-year-old.
He kind of screams as kind of the mask kind of takes, like, over him.
What's going on? So, but it's cool though, you swim around. And, but, yeah, so that stuck with me. The second game I put down was Banjo-Kazooie.
Ooh.
I love Banjo-Kazooie. That game.
I put Banjo-Tooie on there, actually.
It's the only one I ever played. Never did play it.
Hmm. You poor soul.
Hey, I was already... Well, I think at that time... When did Banjo-Tooie come out? Like 2000 or 2001?
I have no idea, I think.
I think that was at the time where I was... At that point where I was ready for a new console. I think that was the point where I was like, okay, yeah.
I couldn't afford a GameCube for years. In fact, I didn't even buy my own GameCube. I eventually got it for Christmas for pretty dang cheap. I got the Super Smash Bros. Melee bundle, which was like $100 at the time.
Cool.
Wish I remembered what year that was, but yeah. I was just late into the GameCube's life cycle. I was still just playing N64. But let's see, Banjo-Kazooie. I did play Banjo-Kazooie. I just happened to play Banjo-Tooie more, but...
See, I always thought Banjo-Kazooie was I played both of them. I played both of them. I thought Kazooie was a lot better than Tooie. I thought Tooie was okay, but the levels were too ambitious. I think it's too... I think in Kazooie, they were just the right size. You can get lost in them, and it's great. But in Tooie, it was... Ugh. You know, there's too many things to collect.
Tooie had a lot of awesome multiplayer games to play, though. Nobody ever seems to say that. I love.
Yeah, didn't it also have like a shooter multiplayer mode as well?
Yeah.
Kind of hold Kazooie like a gun.
That would be cool, but unfortunately, I was cursed into having just one N64 controller. So there's that. But Kazooie. The thing that sticks with me mostly though is the music. That game has such excellent music. And,
recently, I think the whole soundtrack was made available on the composer's Bandcamp page, and I think you can get it all for free, so look into that if you can. His first name's Grant. It's like Grant Kirkhope or something.
Kirkhope, yeah. That's right. Yep, Grant Kirkhope. So...
Good soundtrack, though.
So, my third game is Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Again, I almost had that on my list.
Yeah, I was probably too young to play that game, but I enjoyed it all the same.
You're probably the perfect age then.
it didn't matter the age for me. I was able to rent that without ease. Since I knew people at the mom and pop video store that I rented it from, so I was like, and there's like, you know, I can get in trouble for this. I'm like, don't worry, my lips are sealed.
that game. Again, what sticks with it is the humor was so good. I mean, I think I was 12 when I played that game, and I still loved it. It was hilarious, you know.
I'd probably be offended by it, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I mean, there's mild sexism, racism, and there's all sorts in that game. But
there's a lot of movie references, and I think a lot of the jokes are just jokes from films, which they've obviously redone, but obviously with the characters and so on, which just adds another level of comedy on top of it.
Yeah, some are Saving Private Ryan, the other is...
Oh, yeah, it's got the intro to that.
The Matrix is one, so... And thing is,
Aliens as well.
Yeah, Aliens is one. And that game had a limited... Nintendo refused to publish that game. They refused to. It was one of the few games that Rare published themselves I think THQ published it in Europe because...
Yeah.
And, shoot, what was it on? And there was limited advertising in that. And the only time I saw that was at later at night when I'd be watching, like, say, Monday Night Football or watching, like, you know, late-night talk shows. That was the only time you would see it.
There was a little bit of symbolism in the beginning, though, because the first thing Conker does when you start the game up is the N64 logo would appear, and he would take out a chainsaw and cut it in half. Which maybe, you know, was like the end, going towards the end of the Rare Nintendo partnership. So, it maybe is a little bit symbolic. But
Yeah. That's foreshadowing, wow!
Yeah.
An important game, an influential game, but one that I probably will never play.
It is a fun game now, and it is a game which also, I think you may have missed out, Colin, but has great multiplayer mode.
Yeah, well.
There's a whole bunch of different multiplayer modes in that game. And they're all pretty
fun. I did go back and play the Xbox remake.
Oh, okay.
Which you should avoid if you enjoyed the N64 version.
I have avoided it so far.
When they remade it, because it's obviously... Things are a little bit more sensitive these days when they remade it. At the time they remade it, and so a lot of the jokes are taken out, and they replaced it with very, very bad quality jokes.
Which seems odd. I mean, you would think it moving from the Nintendo console to the, you know, the Microsoft console, which especially at the time aiming itself at the mature market, to have the censored version of the game, essentially.
Did you ever see the original version of Conker? The Conker's 12 Tales?
I've seen really early screens of it. I don't think I've seen any footage.
This happy, cute character, and he's like having fun with the animals. And then Rare, like, no, he's going to be, you know, the most vile person you can
ever know. Because he had an appearance, obviously, in Diddy Kong Racing, which was as the game was currently being developed. But obviously, by the time it ended up being finished, he turned out a little bit different.
Yeah. Best thing about Conker, though, there was no last boss. Well, not so you don't fight the last boss, because the game just crashes.
Yeah.
And then he has a go at the programs. It's just like, you can't make games, and he has a go at them, and it's so funny. Anyway, my final game, onto the GameCube now. I was 16, and it's the Resident Evil remake.
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah, good choice.
That game, because I played the original on PlayStation 1, and it was okay. I thought it was a bit schlocky, it's not really scary, because the zombies were, you know, that game was trying to push the power of the PS1, and they still look bad.
And it had the real live cutscenes in it, opposed to the CG ones.
Yeah, the real
amateur actor
live action. that is terrible. But
The GameCube remake, did it have a different name besides just plain old Resident Evil?
No, it was just called Resident Evil. That was that was back during the deal that Capcom and Nintendo had for just having the Resident Evil franchise exclusive to that console, which
yielded Resident Evil 4.
Yes, but then eventually went to the PS2 because Capcom was not happy with the sales of Resident Evil 4 on the GameCube, which it sold well. It did. It just did not sell gangbusters. But
I think they saw the potential they had on their hands, and they've since released it on absolutely everything they could, including the iPhone.
Everything they could.
Yeah.
Yeah, the iPhone.
Oh, no.
What's that about?
No. And if you thought the Bayonetta 2 backlash for it being exclusive on a Nintendo console was bad, oh, boy. I barely had any internet back then, but boy, reading through magazines, everybody was so mad.
Yeah. Resident Evil 4 was a lot better on GameCube, though. I mean, I played it on PS2 as well, and you can just tell it's a direct port, because the lighting is terrible. It's really washed out, and it doesn't look as good.
Although, you didn't often have many chances to directly compare like that. But the PlayStation was the lower powered of the consoles compared to the GameCube.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I believe it. Like, the way in the order of power was from
most Xbox power, at top.
Xbox, GameCube, and PS2.
That's right, yeah. So...
Wow.
The Xbox had to be the most powerful. The size of that thing was ridiculous. You know, huge thing. So Resident Evil Remake is how all remakes should be done, because they brought back, you know, Shinji Mikami. He completely reworked the game. Like, in the original, you could go through doors and feel safe. Whereas, in the remake, the zombies could actually go through doors now. They can follow you. You know, you're not... Even the safe room isn't really safe.
Yeah.
And it's just... it blew my mind. It was,
yeah,
like,
I think the best thing about that is obviously they don't tell you that the zombies could do that potentially in the future.
No,
you just think you're in a safe place, and then the zombie comes through the door, and you're just panicking because you didn't expect that could ever possibly happen. And you probably had your controller on the floor, and you got to grab it and run.
No. One of the changes they also made with that is if you do not blow a zombie's head off or even burn them,
that's right,
they will come back about an hour later. And I remember I got my one of my very few pee my pants moments in games when I was like, "All right, gonna go back. I gotta go back to this area," and then it just jumps up and just starts running at me. I'm like, "No!"
Yeah, that's just because that was a big deal. Because in the original game, you knew when the zombie was dead because a pool of blood would just show up randomly. And okay, it's dead. That happened, but again, like Aaron said, you had to either blow the head off or set fire to it. Of course, if you haven't got any lighter fluid, you couldn't do it. So, like, oh no. And yeah, really, really, really good. And I hear the Wii version is actually quite good as well, but I haven't played it. So,
yeah, I'd imagine it's quite similar to the GameCube one.
Yeah, I don't know if it's duplicate controls or...
Yeah, obviously there is a remake of the remake you're talking about in the works.
That's right, which is silly.
Which is to launch because, on Xbox 360, Xbox One, PS3 and PS4, unfortunately not the Wii U, which is a bit of a shame.
No, it is nonsense, but yeah, all they're doing is taking the GameCube game and just...
They're re-rendering basically.
Yeah.
Whatever you call the backgrounds, I guess.
Yeah, because it all re-rendered, I suppose. But, yeah, it's nonsense. But, hey, that seems to be the story of the Wii U at the moment, is a lot of stuff being done and they're not getting their slice of the pie.
I've noticed that as well. It's interesting. Well, as you guys were talking about that, I don't play horror games. I've never actually played a game that you could classify within the horror genre. This is a really good topic and kind of lead into our next podcast, which is going to be our Halloween special. But I was just thinking, one of these days when we all have enough money and enough time to actually meet in real life, what we need to do is have me play a horror game.
Ooh.
And
maybe for the 400th episode.
Yeah, I'm not sure we should jump straight into the Resi remake. That would be quite the jump.
Let's do it.
Oh.
Give me the worst
horror
game ever.
I would say
ever.
That's probably the scariest game that exists.
That is, yeah, ooh. Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Interesting. So that would just be very, very entertaining, I think, for all of us. Probably especially you guys. I'd probably just be scarred for life from it. But be interesting, because I'm not much of a horror fan in movies or video games or anything. So, yeah. But with all that, we have reached the end of our show. And we also have kind of foreshadowed our next episode, which will be our Halloween special. So please don't miss out on that, everybody. All right. So if you have any comments or questions on today's show or on anything Nintendo related, please send us a message. You can leave a comment in the post if you're in your web browser, or you can send us an email. Just send it to contact@infendo.com. With that, we have reached the end of episode 330 of Infendo Radio. Thank you very much for listening.
See you, everybody.
Ooh.
See you next time.
Yeah, goodbye.
Bye, everyone.